Thank you, Jaya. And I'd also like to thank APHA for this conference, and I'm really delighted to be on this panel with my co-speakers. Today I'll be talking about training in low-resource settings using clinical videos. And I'd like to start by saying I have nothing to disclose. And I thought I'd start this talk by giving you a few comments, kind of a big picture, big picture discussion, and then talk about how we fit in. And one of the great tragedies, I think, in public health, and this is something that's well known now, that millions of people die every year from illnesses or conditions that could be easily treated or prevented. And what I think makes this even more tragic and difficult to accept, that it's often the case that the difference between life and death is simply a matter of having a lack of basic knowledge and training. And there are many statistics, I think, that could provide kind of strong evidence of this, but there are two I find particularly striking. Two of the biggest killers of children are pneumonia and diarrhea. And there was a study in Lancet that said that 80% of health workers in developing countries couldn't recognize the two most basic danger signs for pneumonia. In another case, in diarrhea, there were surveys done in both India and Nigeria that show that 4 out of 10 mothers believe that when their baby has diarrhea, the best thing to do is to withhold fluids. So that's kind of like the level at which we're talking in terms of need for basic knowledge. And so how do we get involved in this? Well, this project was really driven from field experience, and I'd like to mention our director, Deb Van Dyke, who founded this project. Deb's been involved in working in low-resource settings for about 20 years, most often with Doctors Without Borders. And so she had on many occasions opportunities to see some of these issues firsthand, and I think she had somewhat of a unique window into this. And I think she really came to understand the importance of getting better information to health workers. And she had some pivotal experiences where she really learned the power of video. And one was in Afghanistan, working in family planning program, another in Sudan on a TB program. And she really saw through, the eyes of health workers how powerful video could be as a teaching tool. And so she came back with the idea of sending videos to some of the places she had worked, and she really couldn't find much that was suitable for health workers working in these low-resource settings. And so that led to the beginning of the Global Health Project. And so our goal was to develop instructional videos as complementary training tools, both in pre-service and in-service education, basically to improve health worker knowledge and practices in these settings. And ultimately, of course, with the idea of helping to save lives and reduce morbidity. This wasn't driven from the top down. It was driven from Deb's own field experience. But ultimately, our first two projects on newborn and maternal care, I think, are helping to support MDGs 4 and 5. So many people say, well, there's a lot of video out there, but I think there's something quite unique about the work we're doing, and maybe just a brief plug that I think demonstrates that is if you go to the WHO Reproductive Health Library on videos, there's a section on newborn health, and the only videos in that section are the videos being produced now by Global Health Media Project. So we've got a lot of worldwide recognition on this, and I think there's several features of our approach that make them unique. And I'll go through them quickly. Reliability, we follow international guidelines from WHO, Save the Children and others. They're best practices for low-resource settings, and so they follow the universal guidelines that can be used all over the world. They're filmed in authentic environments. We filmed so far in Nigeria, India, Nepal, Dominican Republic, and we'll be working in Haiti in a few weeks. And we put a real emphasis on modeling respectful behavior. They're also quite user-friendly. People we survey, they really often comment that they're simple step-by-step. When health workers watch these, they feel like they can really do this themselves. We add animation where we can to bring out key teaching points. They're voiced over so they can be done in multiple languages. And we use a mobile-first approach. We're really building this for now, but also with an eye to the future. And so there are videos that can be used quite handily on mobile phones. So far, completed work. We're going to have 50 videos in our first two series on newborn care and childbirth. We have 20 completed on newborn care. They're in English, Spanish, Swahili. French is underway, and so is Nepali. And 10 more, half of those on childbirth that are now being field tested. So I thought it'd be very helpful to give you a couple examples of what these look like. give you an idea of what we're really doing. And so the first one I picked 2 1-minute clips. One of the areas we work on newborn care is on skills and training. So this is on inserting a gastric tube. We also have videos in terms of skills, inserting an IV, how to take a healed blood sample, how to give a newborn exam, that sort of thing. So let me see if I can get this working.
Measure the length of the tube to be inserted. Put the end of the tube on the baby's nose. Stretch it to the earlobe, then to the base of the sternum. Mark the length. When you hold the baby's head still and flex his neck forward slightly. Gently insert the tube slowly and steadily. Aim toward the back of the head until you reach your mark. The tube is uncomfortable for the baby as it's inserted, but painless once it's in place. Never force the tube. If it doesn't slide easily, stop and try the other nostril or the mouth. Very rarely the tube may try to go into the trachea leading to the lungs. This is rare but serious. A feeding that goes into the lungs can possibly be fatal.
Okay, so as you can see, one of the key places we use animation is to help people and health workers visualize things that they may not otherwise understand until they see something like this that explains what the problem or issue might be. Okay, the second one I want to show, so beyond skills, another area on newborn care we focus on is illnesses and danger signs. And so we have several videos on this. This includes things like jaundice, sepsis, lethargy in a baby. And so one of the videos we have is kind of a compilation of this that kind of, all these videos are about 5 to 7 minutes. So a health worker can watch these and learn of the kind of important danger signs to look for. And then each of the videos then goes into more depth. We also now, we have a lot of demand to have this for mothers and caregivers as well. So we're now repurposing this with a little bit different clips and also different language, so it's also suitable for mothers to watch in waiting rooms where they're really a captive audience, or also to be taken home with them or shown on home visits. So I'd like to show this one here on breathing problems. As I mentioned again, breathing problems, I got to back up here. Let's see if I can. Okay. Oh, sorry about that.
As you take the baby's temperature, gather important background information. When did the breathing problem start? Was the labor or birth long and difficult? Did the baby need any help to start breathing? Check for any other danger signs, such as poor feeding and convulsions. The mother explains that the baby has been breathing fast since yesterday. He is also not feeding well. First, observe. The baby looks listless. His chest shows indrawing. As he draws a breath, his chest draws in, and the belly appears to move out.
Okay, so now I'd like to turn to results and talk about what we're learning about the kind of usage and effectiveness of these videos. Now, we're still in an early stage. We released our first videos last year, but we're very much into process and trying to understand from start to finish what works and what doesn't. So this really starts at the beginning with script preparation. With the script preparation, we follow international guidelines, as I mentioned, and we get these reviewed by content experts to look at kind of where there may be inconsistencies among some of the guidelines or to see if anything is new or updated or changed in the field. Once we get draft videos set up, we then field test these with user groups and focus groups in several different countries and on different continents to make sure they work and they're effective, the pacing is right, people understand the various messages. And again, at that point, they go back to medical and content experts to make sure that everything is accurate. Then we get to the final videos. In terms of final videos, just a couple of things in terms of, I do a fair bit of the monitoring myself. In viewership, these are on our website. They're also, as I mentioned, on WHO and several other different websites being promoted. So far, we've had over 100,000 views of the newborn care videos. The viewership is accelerating rapidly. I think the first 6 months, we had about 2,000 views a month. Now they're catching on. We're getting about 15,000 views a month, and it's climbing pretty steadily. And they've essentially been viewed in every country of the world. Number one, as you might expect, is USA. A lot of it's people viewing them, watching them here, and then downloading them to take them on to work with themselves in overseas countries. Second place they're used or watched most frequently is Mexico and then India. This is kind of a long story, and I'll just briefly say a lot of people tell us about the importance of having videos that are localized and contextual. We find, because I think of the message and the universality of many of these skills and illnesses, they're being used all over the world, and the people we interview say there's really no problem in terms of cross-cultural factors. Okay, in terms of downloads by location and organization, about 7,000 downloads worldwide. This is particularly important, I think, because training organizations are using these all over the world, and if you talk to any of these, what typically happens, they download a video, and then they'll use this, they'll project it in classrooms. It often will be used to teach as many as 60 students in different locations in a particular class. Students often then take it back with them to their rural clinics, so they have them offline use and use them. So each download constitutes a kind of huge multiplier effect in terms of how often they get used. And they're being used as well in distance and e-learning programs in many different countries. Lots of demands to have these placed in local languages. One thing I think is valuable is, as we've been told, people often get the message pretty clearly even without the language when the sound is off. So, of course, having them in local language is important, but can only increase and enhance, I think, the impact. Okay, and then I also do myself the surveys and interviews on usage and effectiveness. And this happens at several different levels. In many occasions, we've encountered situations in countries where people won't use these at some of the bigger organizations unless they're approved at the ministerial level. And in several different countries, that's happened. As I mentioned, broad distribution occurs through training programs. And then they often get taken offline so they can use in areas. So internet connectivity is not really needed, so they're used on phones that have embedded memory cards, or they can also be used on DVDs. We haven't done at this point, I wish I could say we have, but because we're new and just because of kind of funding constraints at this point, we haven't done any pre and post-testing ourselves. But I spoke with several people who do training modules and do pre and post-testing. And at least they found that their training programs are quite effective and working, and they often state they think that the videos are a valuable addition to the training that they're doing. And lots of great anecdotal evidence from teachers and students in terms of how these add to training. So next in line, we're hoping to do quantitative analysis. We've got a concept paper ready, and we've talked to several different partners in universities who are interested in tackling a problem like this, both looking at the videos in terms of how they improve practices and ultimately trying to answer the question of, do they help in terms of reducing morbidity and save lives? Okay, and just to wrap up, we're trying to continue to expand our reach through various partnerships at the three key levels we work at. One is production. We're trying to add new videos in different locations and establish dedicated clinical sites. We're distributing through partners. We've actually had UNICEF help us translate some of our videos in West Africa. Red Cross is now doing some work with us in East Africa. And we're members of a variety of networks who help distributing this. And we're now working, as I mentioned, on the research piece. And our vision ultimately is to be able to help provide basic healthcare instruction at any location. And we hope someday also in any language as well. So in conclusion, we have found, and I think Deb's learned firsthand from her own field experience, that videos for low-resource settings are really needed and in high demand. This is the kind of feedback we're getting from users. The videos are being integrated into training programs, and again, not qualitatively, I think we have good evidence, not quantitatively with data yet, but these are really helping to improve instruction, and they're being used commonly for refresher training tools and job aids. And we think this is, we've got a tool here that's going to help provide better knowledge and ultimately save lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr.